The following is presented by the Cheeky Bastards.
Come out to the coast, we'll get together, have a few laughs.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfuckers, and welcome to the fourth edition of Dropping a Bruce, the monthly podcast where we watch every single one of Bruce Willis's 40 direct video releases from his acting career to see if he took the role for a paycheck and dropped a deuce, or if, in fact, he took the role and gave it his all and dropped a Bruce. I'm the Notorious Scott K.
And from the UK, this is the whiny limey, Steve.
And together, we will be your captains on this 40-month journey through the lesser-known movies of Mr. Bruce Willis's filmography. This month's stop is the 2012 crime action thriller, Fire with Fire. Speaking of Fire with Fire, I hope all of you who are listening to us, especially big shout out to those of you who have seemed to have found us on the last of the Action Heroes podcast network. Woo. Hugely thankful for Ryan for putting us on there and for all of you who continue to listen. But we had Fire with Fire with Catch 44. Ooh, today, yeah. We're going to find out, is Fire with Fire better or worse than Setup? Just kidding. Steve, you should start going by Steve Setup Smith. Steve may be one of the few champions of that film, thanks to last month's podcast. But right now, here in America and in the UK, as we record, we are in the beautiful weather of mid-May, early May. When you're hearing this, it's mid-June. It's almost fucking summer. This is my favorite time of year right now. We are finally starting to get good weather. It's like, well, again, when I say this, we both do temperatures differently. The only time we ever cross over the metric system is for drugs. All right, we weigh our drugs over here. We are all on board for drugs and walks and runs for some kind of like benefit. We do 5Ks and 3Ks, and then we weigh our drugs in metric system. I think it's time that we jump into this glorious, glorious movie about firefighting. Just kidding. Now, before we change our names, move to New Orleans, and fall in love with a sexy U.S. Marshal, it's time for the...
What you talking about, Willis?
Just the facts, man. Just the facts.
This film was released in 2012, written by Tom O'Connor and directed by David Barrett, starring Josh Duhamel, Bruce Willis, Vincent D'Onofrio, Rosario Dawson, Richard Schiff, Kevin Dunn, Julia McMahon, Vinnie Jones, Quentin Rampage Jackson, and Curtis 50 Cent Jackson. With a runtime of 96 minutes, it holds a 5.6 IMDb rating and a 7 critics and 36 audience score on Rotten Tomatoes. A fireman takes an unexpected course of action when a man whom he's been ordered to testify against after being held up at a convenience store threatens him. Lionsgate and Grindhouse Entertainment Group presents Fire with Fire.
Most calls are routine. Every once in a while, you get that call where all hell's breaking loose, and to most people, it looks like a blazing monster, but I understand how it behaves, how it progresses. I say the same thing every time. I say, trust me, do everything that I ask, and I promise you'll stay alive today.
No!
You see the man you saw at the store, say his number.
Number 4.
Step forward and repeat the phrase.
Darren. Thomas Coleman.
Oh my God.
Social security number 434605.
Hagen is a sociopath. He is a stone cold killer.
Jeremy, we can't get Hagen unless you testify.
So my whole life just goes away?
I will put you in witness protection.
Breathe, line up your target, and squeeze.
I'll do it.
Your new identity has already been arranged. You've been erased. You're a ghost, but you'll be safe.
What the hell do you think you're doing? We're U.S. Marshals, not amateurs.
I've been seeing someone.
One day, son, I will find you.
I'm a ghost. I don't exist. To hell with witness protection. You're gonna need protection from me.
Tell me how to get to Hagen.
Blood in, blood out.
I didn't want to have to do this.
You ain't got the balls.
I have a 9mm Beretta. I have a Ruger Security 6357 Magnum. So you tell Hagen's men if they want to get this boy, they're gonna have to go through me.
You have to stop.
I love you. And this is what it's gonna take. He's never gonna stop.
We'll be right back.
Everyone's got his dark side.
Now, Mr. Willis plays Long Beach Police Lieutenant Mike Sella, whose partner and his partner's wife were killed by the head of a local neo-Nazi gang years ago. Now, thanks to some events, he has the opportunity to bring him to justice. Yes, Fire with Fire. That fantastic 2012 film. Let me get the folks a plot. Now, you know who Bruce plays, but we should know the plot because the great Josh Duhamel, I think that's how we say his last name.
I was pondering that myself. I just thought Duhamel.
Yeah.
Duhamel.
It's like saying his last name. Josh Duhamel. Anyways, yeah. Mr. Josh Duhamel. Duhamel, however you want to say it. Josh D, for those of you in the know.
Hey, Josh D over here.
After Josh D's character, Jeremy Coleman, witnesses the brutal murders of a convenience store owner and his son, he barely escapes with his life, and he's forced to testify against the neo-Nazi gang leader. For his own safety, he is placed into witness protection. But when his new identity is compromised, he's forced to take the law into his own hands in order to get his life back and to save the lives of those he loves. That is the gist of this film.
In a nutshell, that's it.
So to give you some real quick precursors before we talk about the film, it's never a good sign when a film has 21 executive producers and was financed by 7 separate production companies.
And especially when one of those producers is 50 Cent.
50 Cent.
He's back.
Red flag number two, besides the 50 Cent, it was made for nearly $10 million. However, in its, you know, little nod to it, it did gross back $2.5 million. That's, you know, I mean, that surprised me. How much they made it for and how much it made back. Yeah. I was like, well, okay, maybe more than I thought.
I did notice that myself. So I'm assuming that's international box office. So it had to get a cinema release in.
Had to be. Had to be because of Mr. Bruce Willis's name attached to it.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because I was thinking, well, if that made $2.5 million internationally, if that would have hit the cinemas in the U.S., that could have broke even. I know I'm just being optimistic, but I could have made some, you know.
You're right. Like, but
because I'm just going by the law of
averages.
Here's
the thing.
You know,
I think some of these movies, as we're learning real quickly here, is I truly believe that some of these movies are made. The reason they're going straight to DVD is because they know in America, no one's going to go see a Bruce Willis guest starring film where it's an action movie. He does literally no action.
They
know that they can probably shift it on some of the foreign viewers because they're going to go see it because Bruce Willis is in it.
Yeah, they don't know the full.
I don't know if any of our listeners have noticed or if you've noticed, almost all the trailers I play in the show, Bruce Willis is like in 90% of the trailer. Like most of the trailer, if you see the trailer, it feels like they're like, we really got to hype this up as if this is a Bruce Willis film. And then you go to it and you're like, I don't know that he was in it much. Now, this film I can best summarize, and I figured it out as I was watching it, especially the second time through. And it's something we're going to get into, and it's befuddled me a bit here and how I feel about it. But this is basically a primetime network TV show here in America where the ratings have been stripped away. And you can now really amp up the violence and the language where it's concerned. Because this really has the look of a TV movie. Reason being is Mr. Barrett, our director. He started his career as a stuntman and progressed to a TV director. This is his only film that he's made that's not in TV. He has done over 177 TV shows with directing credits to his name. Those shows are, some being the Fear the Walking Dead, Star Trek Discovery, Arrow, Once Upon a Time, not the movie, the TV show, NCIS Los Angeles, CSI New York, Cold Case, Smallville, and with a whopping 57 episodes directed, CBS's Blue Bloods, a TV show with the lesser of the Wahlbergs, the former new kid on the block, Donnie Wahlberg.
Donnie.
And Mr. Mustache himself, Tom Selleck, happened to be starring those. So.
Ooh, oh, I know that show.
Yes.
He did direct a movie in 2018, I believe.
Did he?
No one's seen it.
I think it was called Water with Water.
No, I think it was called The Guardian Angel. I think that's like a German.
Really?
I think it's like a foreign war movie or something. But no one's seen it anyway. So
yeah,
I'm just giving him props because believe me, he's not going to get any after this.
Yeah, it's not a surprise that this movie has a real made-for-TV, like episodic CBS TV show vibe to it.
Definitely.
Definitely. The American listeners will understand what I'm talking about when I say CBS TV. It's very homogenized, very whitewashed, very, I don't even want to say like leaning like in a conservative nature, because the way conservatives are in this country have really changed. But it's more for your grandparents. It's, hey, in 60 minutes, you're going to see a show. There's going to be a couple of things, but don't worry, at the end of the day, through the trials and tribulations, who's going to wrap up, and the heroes are going to win. Yeah. And you're not really going to care how they do it. And we're going to...
It's not going to be too demanding.
No. It may throw a few surprises at you, which this movie does. Throw a few surprises at you and be excited. Before we really dive in, but I think the best way to really look at this, one of the things I enjoyed about it, all right, so I'll start with what I enjoyed about it before we dive into all our little fun notes, is... It didn't look terrible. Like, it had a, you know, like, it looked like some decent production value to it.
Absolutely.
And there had some surprising elements in it, and it tried to do a few things. You could tell that this was definitely a TV director who was let off the leash a little bit.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he's not constrained to the 60-minute storytelling. He does at least keep it under 100, like we talked about last episode. I don't know that we'll ever break 100. I'm pretty sure we're not going to break 100 minutes in any of these films.
Thank God for that.
But pacing-wise, we move along. I'll give him that, you know, the drama, it looks decent. There's great supporting cast.
I mean, the cast.
Great supporting cast was fantastic. And they were all really good in their roles, regardless of if the subject material they were given was stellar. They really put forth some damn good performances. I remember sitting there going, God, I think, so. Like, if this was a TV show, these guys are going for those supporting, those guest starring Emmys. You know what I mean? They're like, they're really working hard in this episode to get that special Emmy, because you pop into one show. I was like, they're really working hard at this. And its major failure is Josh Duhamel. And not his fault. I don't think, you know whose fault it is? You know whose fault it is?
He's miscast.
But you know whose fault it is?
Who?
Michael Bay.
No.
Michael Bay cast this cocksucker in Transformers. And he wasn't terrible in Transformers.
Is that right?
He plays something part of the military, like the Air Force, Special Force thing. He's not the major star, but he's like a supporter in it. He's not terrible. Yeah. Yeah. But he's in there, and I think that this gentleman...
A man's got to know his limitations, as Clint Eastwood said.
Well, I think this man thought, hey, we can get him on the cheap. Because I don't think, of all the money they spent it on D'Onofrio, Willis, and the rest. I bet Duhamel did this for $5. He may have been the lead, but he did not get the lead's money.
Well, you know, you're going to get to star in a movie with Bruce Willis. At that point in time, that was probably still quite a...
He gets to make out with a very, very lovely Rosario Dawson.
I would
have taken that role just for that as well.
Yeah, got that right. You got that right.
And again, I hate to always keep taking a shit on setup, and I apologize. I did enjoy this more than setup. Not a ton, but it moves along. Like, I felt, even though story wasn't... Look, did we not know how this was going to end? Did we not know that at the end of the day, Josh Duhamel was going to be the guy who... I've seen these movies 1,000 times.
Yeah.
They are retread over and over, and I'm going to probably go out on a limb and say 75% of the ones we're going to watch down the road are similar in storyline, right? Like, we're either going to get the setup where it's going to be gangsters or it's going to be the lone hero who only he can, the vigilante justice, only he, even though he has zero reason to even think he can do any of the things he's going to do.
In the defense of the movie, though,
yes.
I mean, not to get too far ahead of things, he gets his ass kicked a lot.
Yes, I was going to say that's another positive is... Even where it fails in its writing, where it does succeed in its writing and directing, is that it knows that this guy has no...
He's out of his depth.
Way out of his depth.
And he does throw up twice.
And we're going to get that really well done. Like I said, there are moments in this that I really, really enjoyed. And it kept me going through it for 96 minutes or whatever it was, because there were some moments all of a sudden I'd be like, okay.
Little flourishes that just elevate the material, just that smidgen, just enough to kind of...
Where you kind of go, you know, maybe Mr. Barrett knows some stuff. He just has been doing TV for so long that, you know, he's in a groove. So he probably took a couple months off, or it was probably during, like, you know, the off season of shooting a TV show. Or, you know, maybe he was, you know, moving on to another project. Because I think he starts Blue Bloods right after this. Because when I checked his IMDb page, he does Blue Bloods from like 2012 on. He's been doing that a lot. And this, you know, so he probably did this right before that. But he comes into this with knowledge, and he shoots this like a TV movie, but he knows some film. And he's like, I can get this in. Like, I can slide some of this stuff in that I couldn't do on CBS, and he would never be able to do probably on Blue Bloods. But he's like, I can do a few of these fun little tricks. And to him, I say, you know, good for you, sir. It's like, you know, it's like the boss is away and you're like, you know what? Everyone's wearing Hawaiian shirts today. Like, he's like, we don't normally do this here on set of CBS, but CBS isn't in charge of this today.
It's a competently directed movie, definitely.
Yes.
Josh Duhamel, he's a little bit, he leans a little bit too far into the Keanu Reeves school of acting for my liking, where, you know, you're good at what you do, stick to that. You know, the running around, the punch and the shooting, you can do. But when you try to emote, it kind of, you can't quite pull it off.
No.
Yeah. But, you know, no. I'm going to be very kind to this movie because I wasn't so kind last time. But yeah, he's got the looks, you know,
he's in the movie for the same reason Felipe was in it.
I think he's got enough presence. He's got enough presence, you know. You can buy him as a bit of a rugged sort of fireman type, but wisecracking guy.
Well, let's just say what it is. He shouldn't be doing the action, and they have a world-renowned action star who we're going to get into, and this may be one of those first movies I'm not thrilled with of his acting, and they have him he literally is not there. So the guy who should be doing the action does basically none, and the guy who shouldn't does all of it. Yeah. And you're kind of like, okay. And everyone else who's, you know, supporting this is fantastic. Even in the most ridiculous, sometimes written scenes, they are really performing. I wrote down a note. I'm like, this movie is confuddling me. Why am I sometimes loving this when the guest stars are on? And then the minute Josh has to take over, I'm like, fuck. There's no fast forward button. I'm like, can we get to the part where the guest stars come back in so they can help him along in this movie? You know what? Remember we talked about on Cheeky Bastards a couple months back about John Wick, where Keanu just says a couple of lines and shuts the fuck up and fights, and he lets the good acting do the good acting. Same should apply for this movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Dude, Hamill should have looked nice, your shirt off for the ladies, do a couple of kissing scenes, and don't say another fucking word.
Yeah,
just look pretty.
That's what I was kind of getting at, really, yeah. So he's not quite a fucking wet blanket, or, you know, he's got enough going for him.
He just falls
a little bit short, really. Just falls a little bit short of being the leading man. You know, so
he's a lifetime Hallmark rom-com.
Yeah.
Good for that. He's good.
Yeah,
or even
exactly.
In Transformers, he's not terrible when he's the side guy. He's not.
He needs to be the
he's
support.
Not Willis.
He
yes.
needs to be the support
yes.
guy. He's not,
he
the,
needs
he's
support,
not the
yes.
lead. Yeah, yeah. Agree. Definitely.
Now we're going to start making fun of some things.
Now let's take the fucking
here
piss
we go.
Out of this movie.
The first one. The only thing I can figure why Josh Duhamel's character is a firefighter is so that the writer could name this movie Fire with Fire, that from time to time, through plot points, Josh's character could get out of some jams by disabling fire alarms and knowing how to cut off other stuff. Like, it just was like it suited it. And then, so at the end, we could have this giant fire scene climax.
Yeah. Which was pretty well handled, though, to be fair.
For the special effects, you could kind of see it, but it actually was pretty... For a little bit, I was like, is this real fire? And then that was pretty good.
I was a little bit worried about Rosario at one point. I was thinking, I hope you're going to take care of her here. Because she looks like she's in fucking trouble right now.
Do you know where you can definitely tell that the CGI'd in all the fire effects? When she's out the window shooting somebody.
Yeah.
Like, right that moment, you go, that looks really bad. But other than that, not bad.
Before I forget... Not related to that, the fire business. But before I forget, I did find it funny that it was 15 minutes before the opening credit sequence comes in.
Yes. It's the longest cold open ever.
Yeah, but it's quite economic, though, what it does in that credit sequence, because it kind of tells you who everyone is without the film having to do it.
That's one of my notes. Opening titles, pretty damn good. But you know what that is? That's television opening
titles.
That
is television, yeah. I was sort of like, Jesus, that's coming a bit late, the credits. But then I thought while I was watching, I was like, well, you are. At least you're kind of filling in like certain details here that you should have done it in the movie, because that would have given the movie a little bit more depth, perhaps. But yeah, I just thought that was funny that I had to wait 15 minutes for the credits. You're not, you know, like you're some kind of epic movie. But yeah, so Vincent D'Onofrio, I mean.
Oh, I was going to say, he's phenomenal. But when they introduce him, that's bizarre too. It proves one of my points, but I think it may prove one of your points the way we're going to talk about right now.
Yeah.
So after Josh saves a very expensive thing of scotch for whatever. What the fuck ever. We just have to know that we just have to know he's a firefighter.
Yeah.
And he comes out and everyone claps and yay for him. He went, dumbass, went back to save an expensive thing of scotch that then the bartender gives him anyways. What the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, that was...
Whatever. And then they're going to go have happy hour at his place at 7 a.m. And apparently we're supposed to believe it's 6 a.m. It looks like it's midnight. It looks like it's just like 3 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah,
whatever. So they go to a convenience store. It's somewhere in California, Long Beach area, that I guess doesn't have a gas station because his buddies go across the street to get gas. He walks in, and then out of the fucking blue, instantly, a couple of mooks come walking in the door. Oh, led by one of your own.
I know.
Fucking Vinny
Jones. Everybody. Vinny fucking
Jones. Fuck. And I love Vinny Jones, but God, he's one now.
And fuck when he, look off.
When he's not useless. When he's not doing like, you know, Lock, Stock, Two Smoking Barrels, when he's not in that range. When he's not with Guy Ritchie, though. But when he's not with Guy Ritchie, he's just Vinny.
A plank of fucking wood.
Yes, yes. He's awful.
But that is a very, you know, all that aside, that's a very peculiar scene in the convenience.
It makes no sense.
An Aryan group walks in. It's a pretty crappy convenience store. You don't really, I'm not sure. Did you know the kid was the son?
No.
That just kind
only
of
after
gets,
he gets shot. So and they say no he shot a son.
That's only like, there's no suspense there then.
No.
Because you just think he's a kid.
There's no reason
store.
For him to be Aryan. A thing I got on you for two episodes ago was poor writing of using the N-word.
Yeah.
In this one, they prove that you don't need to say the N-word for there to be a racist. They don't say it once in the scene. This guy's ahead of the neo-Nazi Aryan brother. He's got a goddamn swastika poorly drawn and tattooed in the middle of his throat. Whatever.
That made my fucking blood boil, yeah? Because I'm like, you've got this big-time Aryan white power Nazi, and he doesn't say the N-word once.
And
I'm like,
not only that,
he's like a cuddly racist.
Yes.
What the fuck?
He's not even there to kill them because they're black. He just wants their corner store for some reason, which makes no fucking sense. Because it's in a good location.
We never get to the bottom of that, do we?
No. It's just so he could attempt to kill Josh Duhamel. We could go on the run, and then we have this whole story of him trying, like.
Yeah, see, this is my thing, right? I was just like, look. I stand by what I said about James Remar using the N-word, okay?
I agree with you.
You're a fucking racist.
It wasn't James Remar
I had
the problem
with. It's kill or be killed in that situation. Yes. You know,
it wasn't James Remar. It was your other wrestling buddy. UFC guy saying it.
But what I'm saying is, in this, you've got the head of this like Aryan white power organization, and he's like this cuddly racist.
Is he racist? That's the thing. He's got the swastika, but other than that, is he even racist?
I think having a red swastika tattooed on your chest.
But at the same time, none of the things he does is racist. Motivated by racism.
I know exactly what you're saying, but I think the fucking 7-inch fucking red swastika tattooed in your chest kind of gives it away.
I get it. It would like be like having a Ku Klux Klan member dressed in full regalia like they are, like in... and jangle a chain. Be a crossing guard at a black school and just help kids across the street. Yeah. Like, he just happens to wear that as his costume. He's not racist at all. He just dresses up as the Ku Klux Klan.
It's just like, but we, you know, they're trying to make him the most evil guy there is.
It's almost like he lost the bet.
Hey, just don't let him, we can't have him saying the N-word, though. It's just like, what the fuck?
Even if they don't say the N-word, there's no point, like, there's just no reason for him to...
No, I know what you're saying.
He kills the two black people, and you think, okay, this is definitely race-related.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
They don't say one racist thing when he somehow, for the dumb thing, gets on the phone with one of the Crips. Apparently, it's a gang war. Like, they would have been better suited if they had just been, like, in The Departed. They're there for protection money. And you know what I mean? Like, he's just, and they're just Italian mobsters or whatever. Like, it would have worked so much better because being Aryan had nothing to do with anything.
And no, it didn't. Was just, no, you're right. You're absolutely right.
It would
have
been like
right.
The Inglourious Bastard. Even like if World War II wasn't about the Nazis, it's just like that's just their team colors. It made no sense.
Yeah, because obviously the black gang against his gang.
Yeah.
It didn't have. It's not about color, is it?
No, it was about territory.
Well, yeah.
Because that's what he says. I'm just going to take your territory.
Yeah.
So him shooting the guy's son and then shooting the guy, like, it was just bizarre. So we've established
the pedestrian writing we've got in this fucking movie. Let's get that out. We've got that out of the way. And it's a very peculiar scene in the convenience store where they bust in and kill everyone. Like they're trying to get cigarettes for free or something.
Yes. Well, when he first pulls out the gun, I think they're robbing the place. Like, I thought it was a robbery.
Yeah.
And then after he shoots him and you see the swastika, you go, okay, this is race motivated. And you get the phone and you think he's going to say the N-word and he's going to say some stuff or at least talk some shit about him, you know, something black, this or that. Nothing. He just says, I just want to prove a point that I can take your land or your territory anytime I want. Yeah. That was it. And then Duhamel throws some kind of guacamole. Vinny jumps, right. As always happens. He hauls off.
He throws a jar of guacamole at Vinny Jones and escapes.
He escapes, runs through this alleyway, does get shot by Vinny Jones, falls down, and luckily, who's he fall down in front of? His friends were getting gas six blocks over. They just knew which way to go. He must have had a GPS on him, and they tracked him where he was running.
Yeah.
I thought that was convenient.
That was brutal. That was bad.
So we're not
off to a very good start there.
But we get Bruce Willis early in the film.
We do?
He literally, very next thing is they arrest D'Onofrio's character, and we're going to have a whole big showdown. And Bruce comes in. And now it's the toughest thing I've written so far for this episode.
Just say it, man. Just fucking say it.
Says, it pains me to say this, but I think this is the first film that Bruce was mediocre at best. I wouldn't say he mailed it in, but he seems tired and seems to sleepwalk through this film. Maybe it was because D'Onofrio was so fucking electric, which he is. Like, this opening scene doesn't do what D'Onofrio becomes justice. He, actually, when he goes into the reading the lines, like, he is menacing in this film. Like, loved him. Like, he, no, this is going to sound horrible. I know he's the head of the Aryan Agent, but every time he was on screen, I was mesmerized. I was excited he was on screen. I didn't know what he was going to do next, where he was going to go. His calm.
He's not chewing the scenery, is he? He's invested in this. He's really giving it.
Every single person, except maybe Bruce and Josh, were invested in this film. Like, I truly believe.
I think Duhamel was invested. I just don't think.
Yeah, just out of his depth, yes.
Yeah, no, but I know what you're saying. You're absolutely right. D'Onofrio is completely on top form. He's treating this like he's in a Scorsese movie.
I'll be honest with you. I know this can sound crazy, and maybe because of the writing, but if this had been an actual theater-released movie, D'Onofrio could have been up for a supporting actor for this. He was that good in the film. Like, he was that believable in the role. Maybe the role didn't have the power of, like, the American History X type of roles.
But he was giving,
like you said, he gave as much in this as he would have if this was a Scorsese film.
Yeah,
he was just bringing it.
Having said that, you know that anyway, because of the kind of actor he is.
Well, just like we talked about Whitaker last episode.
Yeah, he shows up regardless. Like we say about Nicolas Cage, you know what I mean? Yeah, he's in some sucky films, but he doesn't suck.
No, it's
the same sort of deal, you know, where you have got a heavyweight in this.
So maybe it's because of his acting, or like we talked about, maybe because it's an action movie and they don't use Bruce for any of it. Except for this one, it pissed me off so much. I wanted to fight the writer of this, good or bad, for whatever we want to talk about. With the meeting of the major characters, like, many scenes have not had these powers, but the 90s really put together these powerful scenes where the two heavyweights would meet, and True Romance does it, and then they have it in The Heat, like, the big guys meet up face to face, and they always have, like, this face of mano a mano before we get to the third act, and we're gonna settle things.
Yeah.
So we have this meet for no reason. There's no reason for these two to meet up with each other.
Nothing new is hashed out.
Nothing's really said. But we have D'Onofrio and Willis meet up in some abandoned warehouse or whatever, and they just talk a little shit to each other. Mostly, it's D'Onofrio talking shit, basically kind of flaunting that he's the one who killed his partner and his partner's wife, but basically also being very vague about it, like as if he just heard about this happened. And he taunts Willis a little bit, and then Willis just basically leans and says, "You won't kill another person," or whatever. And then he turns around, and he's about to leave, and some fuckwad, maybe they were just like, "Look, we can't have Bruce on set and not have him have a little bit of action."
That's exactly what happened.
Exactly. And the guy reaches up, touches him, and Bruce throws a couple of punches in Bruce Willis style, drops the guy for no reason. There's no reason the guy even approaches him. There's zero reason for this antagonistic move, except that they're like, we got to have Bruce punch somebody. Last day on set.
But this is the kind of movie we're dealing with, where things happen purely because we've got the actor to do it.
Well, actually, the other stuff at least somewhat keeps up with plot. This had zero reason for any of it to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not arguing with you, but it's that kind of movie. Look, Bruce Willis has been in this movie for the last hour. He hasn't punched anyone or shot a gun yet.
Or really done much of anything.
Well, no.
In my opinion. He's in this movie more than he was in the other three, possibly.
He's in this quite a bit.
Like,
definitely.
He's actually...
Yeah, no, he's...
He really is a supporting actor in this, you know, for as much as we're probably going to find out he's in it for 20 minutes maximum. He's got at least 30 minutes or so of screen time, I felt like.
In this movie, 50 Cent does an actual cameo. It is a cameo, isn't it? He's in the movie.
I don't know how you got the service, but two things you can check, fans, here. I watched this on Tubi, which is a free service here. On Tubi, there is, when you click on it and it goes to the movie load up screen and everything, you know, so you can play or resume or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
50 Cent is in there holding one of those automatic, like, shotgun slash really grenade launchers that you play with in, like, Grand Theft Auto. And on one of the posters you'll see in our graphics, he's in the bottom corner. There was a scene where I think 50 Cent and his crew get into it maybe with this Aryan Brotherhood at some point.
Okay,
it
maybe.
Got cut. It never made it. So
we need
a director's cut.
We need a director's cut, man.
Yes, we do. That's exactly what By director's cut, Josh Duhamel's cut out a lot of it. We get just an hour of this fight scene. And
unfortunately, you get more 50 Cent.
Well, we're going to get into him in a second,
careful,
too.
Be careful what you wish for.
Yes.
But yeah, at least, I mean, he's in it for about a minute, maybe.
Yeah. And it's one of the better scenes, but not because of him.
Yeah, and also, he's the smallest person in the room. You notice that?
Once again, it comes to what we said about in setup. I said, for all of the gangster shit he talks about, he is the least imposing person when it comes to trying to be a gangster. It's as if he does not know how. Quentin Rampage Jackson, former UFC fighter, who was phenomenal in his 5 minutes, really showed up your boy. Now, I'm not going to talk trash, but really showed up your boy because of his performance. He was way better than he was as Mr. T's character in the A-Team. He was fantastic in it. The other guy in
I did. Do you know what? I didn't put two and two together there.
Yes,
I didn't.
He played,
he did look familiar, but...
Yep, that's him.
Can't say I'm a fan of that either, so...
The other guy, I can't remember his name, but he used to be a defensive back for the Oakland Raiders in football. He was more believable as a gangster. The two of them were far more believable as gangsters. They were so good, I would have believed them to be... In Training Day, they would have been good in Training Day as the gangsters, right? Like, I was like, they're good. And then all of a sudden I was like, oh, who's going to be the boss? And we come around the corner and it's 50. And I'm like, this dude's got the imposing presence of a fucking pigeon in surrounded by, you know, vultures. It's like, this guy is fucking a wet blanket. He's terrible.
Yeah.
Like, he should never have gotten to movies because any street cred he might have had with just his rap, in my opinion, is gone. I lost all of my... Now, he's also a bigger person. He said, look, let's not start going saying, like, I could beat a 50 Cent. I know I can't. I know he's a bigger guy than me. He'd probably knock me out. However, I don't feel scared of him by any, like, I don't believe any of the things he said. I'm starting to think that maybe he didn't get shot 100 times, like you said. And maybe he was born in the suburbs and just grabbed this persona. Like, Eminem comes across as a tougher guy than 50 Cent ever does.
And a far better actor. But I will say this. Let's just settle. He can't act. That's all this is. He just can't act. Look, if you can read, just because you can memorize lines in the script, that doesn't mean you can act. And he just can't act. That's all it is.
I think even the two guys who are in it, they're riffing on guys either they know or they were like when they weren't in their professional career, right? Like, so you would think he'd at least be able to just gangster it up like he was back in the day. Like, that's all you have to do. Like, hey, 50, I know you're a respected person now. Just be who you used to be before you became the respected. And drop back into that life.
Listen, I don't know if you ever got around to it, but, like, one of my recommendations on the Cheeky Bastards podcast, available wherever you get your podcast, when I talked about Trespass, the Walter Hill movie with Ice-T and Ice Cube,
yeah.
That's presence.
Yes.
That's two guys giving it the big, we say in the UK, giving it the big and giving it the...
They're leaning into who they are and where they've come from. And this guy can't even do that.
But the funny thing is, well, not to go on a 50 Cent musical tangent, but he
this is now a 50 Cent podcast.
He can't rap either. He just mumbles, doesn't he? He's got no vocabulary. He's got no flow. He's got no style. He's no fucking Ice-T, but then very few people are. So anyway, he can't act. He can't rap. No. He just stands there looking like a gormless twat.
Yes.
Fuck that guy.
How did you feel about Mr. Willis? Am I being too hard on him for this? Or is it because the other three performances that we've seen were so much better that, you know, as you call it, like bog standard? Did it not just feel like
Okay. I'll say one thing. He's too old to play the Josh Duhamel character. Okay.
That's fair. Yeah, that would have been awful.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
I would agree 100% with you there.
We'll give him that. That's all I can really give him, though. I don't think it's not a well-written character.
No.
Look, this is going to sound like we're going around in circles eventually because he's a good actor. So he's fine at what he's doing. But he's been given nothing.
Yeah. And he's not giving anything in return.
Well, he can't. He's working with a banal, formulaic character. There's nothing for him to really do. Oh, look, Bruce Willis is in this. That's all you've got. You haven't got Bruce Willis is in this, the assassination of a high school.
Of a high school principal. Jesus Christ, we'll get
that
right eventually.
We'll get it right one day. But in that, you know, he's a kind of quirky headmaster.
Yes.
In the setup, he's almost like a, you know, kind of philosophical, like, mob boss.
Yeah.
In Catch 44, he's a fucking messed up criminal mastermind.
Who has peanut allergies but keeps eating nuts. Yeah. He can't help himself.
Yeah. And in this, he's a cop who doesn't even really need to stand up.
He's a cop who's not... Yeah.
He could have been sat down one of his scenes, apart from where he punches the guy. He could literally have just been sat in his chair at the fucking desk.
He's the guy in all the great cop movies who's in the background. The cops you don't know about who are just sitting there answering phones, doing the desk. That's what he is. He's not...
Okay, look. It's hard for him to elevate what he's been given because he's not been given anything.
Yeah.
It's like, it's impossible. He's an actor, not a fucking magician, you know? you can't just expect him to pull a great performance out of his ass when he's got nothing to perform. That's the problem.
He has two moments where he could have possibly shined. And maybe, like you said, maybe it is the writing. His head-to-head with D'Onofrio, it's all D'Onofrio, and he just kind of stands. It's almost like he's standing, like he got called into the principal's office, and he was getting yelled at and just stood there and took it.
Yeah.
And the other one is when he's then on the phone with the U.S. Marshals guy.
Yeah, he's on fire.
And then all of a sudden he gets upset. You're kind of like...
I kind of like that, though.
But it comes out of nowhere. Like, you know what I mean? Like, everything else is just like, hey, Marvin, how you doing? You know, it's
Maybe he just did that to amuse himself because he was falling asleep.
But because of that, it seems so odd. Like, it almost feels like... And again, comes down to editing, but it feels like overacting at that moment because you're kind of like, where did this come from?
Yeah, there's no balance to it. That's all kind of, it just comes out
of the blue. And it never, pops up again.
I cannot argue. Bottom line is, you know, he's not given anything, which is unfair to criticize him about, is what I'm saying.
When I wrote some stuff down, I was like, he's just there. And that's the best way I can say it. He's just there.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? The sad thing is amongst all the other things that are going on in the film with a bunch of other actors, they're really putting in performances. Like you said, even Duhamel,
he
is doing mental gymnastics trying to figure out how to be this fucking firefighter turned savior.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, the real star, the guy, the headliner, is just kind of... This is the first film it does feel like he's... Not, he didn't mail it in, but
that's what I'm trying to avoid saying, because I don't think that's fair to say that.
But he's not elevating anything. Like, he's not taking any of the material.
He hasn't been given it to elevate. He's been given nothing to elevate.
Yeah, but even in setup, he gives some of the better lines.
It's a tough situation, because you're right. I agree completely with you. I'm just trying to word it in a way that it doesn't sound like I'm saying...
Yeah, I'm not saying I don't give a fuck, but...
He doesn't phone it in, but he's got... It's almost like he's got no choice but to phone it in.
He just does the job. He just does his job. Like, you know, he just shows up, does the job.
He's been given a menial task, and that's what he delivers.
Yes. So, when you watch it, folks, and if you take a chance on this, you'll notice it. And like I said, some of it could be because of the other things going on around him with some of the other actors in this. Really putting out performances, whether this script or material even deserved it, they were really putting, like, Rosario Dawson's fantastic in it. And the dumbest love story makeup ever, that scene where he's at the fucking hotel room and they do this little cat and mouse coy game. Who's that for? Us, the audience? Also, I knew it's the minute she came around the corner, I knew that they're banging each other.
That is one of my gripes, because they're just in a relationship. So it's hard to really care about it. You don't see it grow. So that's just like within the click of a finger, they're boning.
Yeah.
And that's they're just in a relationship.
I do apologize to any female listeners. This is going to come across as piggish from a male. And I do apologize, but I'm gonna be honest. I'm just gonna be open and honest.
You are a pig.
I was hoping that if we're gonna have this stupid relationship sex scene, we were gonna get some goods. That's what I was hoping. I was like, this has got to pay off somehow. If we're going to see her, if we're going
to
make up that Duhamel and her now.
You wanted to see her titties, is what you said.
I wanted to see something. Yeah, I did. I wanted to see something.
Yeah. Do you know what? Actually, let's get the one thing. I bet you most women would like to see her titties too.
I would have even been okay with if we see her titties, you throw a little of the old frontal nudity for Josh Duhamel. I'm all about everyone getting some of their own in the thing. Because later we get Duhamel, for some reason, we get his butt ass and his ass and him showering and crying for some dumb reason after he, you know, whatever. So the ladies get this weird, slow, melodramatic shower scene with him in it, and they get to see him basically naked in his ass. They just don't get the front. And what do we get of one of the most beautiful women to walk the earth? Not a whole lot of anything. And she's and even in that scene, she's better than him. Like even in that scene,
she's playing a strong female character, you chauvinistic piece of shit.
I didn't say she was weak. I never said that. I said I would like to have seen her good. That's all I'm saying. Look at folks, you're gonna want to see her goods too. You're gonna wish like, God damn it. Yeah. Where were the goods?
You're gonna feel a bit robbed, all right, guys.
But I should have known that this is like a CBS TV, and so we're going to get violence. This is the standard American homogenized TV show. We will kill every motherfucker in the room. We'll blow the brains out. We'll set them on fire. You will not see tits. You will not see any kind of goods because children. We got to think about the children.
I did think that was funny that because he's such a good guy, this Josh Duhamel guy. There is one bit where he shoots someone, right? And that's literally the only person he shoots in the film, but they're already on fire. So it's almost
he shoots a couple, but
I don't know, man. I'm not sure. But what I'm saying is, that's like I may be shooting him, but I'm just putting him out of his misery because he's on fire.
So where it does excel is at least the movie, it gives us some melodramatic bullshit talking moments, but it just like in TV, it jumps into some pretty interesting action scenes, like, you know, after they go to the gun range, because we have to make sure that we bang it on the head that he knows how to shoot a gun. So later when he has to shoot a gun, we go, oh, he's a fireman who knows how to shoot a gun.
That did make me laugh, though. How the fuck she spotted that sniper at the beginning?
Hilarious. It wasn't that she spotted it. She got out of the car like a Jedi and could tell there was a disturbance in the fucking force. And she was like, this doesn't feel right. She looks like 100 yards away and the sun, which is, again, dead in the sky. It's literally midday. Somehow, a guy who's hiding out in a house, I don't know, 4 or 5 football fields away, the midday sun is angling just perfectly to hit a glint of his scope. And then she sees the light. And then she's like, But give the guy credit. The bullet dance back and forth where you like we see where the bullet goes and they go.
I'll give you that. And then Josh Duhamel for some reason just turns into fucking Chow Yun-fat and he's jumping around with fire and guns like he's
not
fucking...
even that though. But like I thought they killed and I was like, oh, they just killed Rosario Dawson. Now look, I don't know the exact caliber that the gentleman who used to be in the show here, Nip Tuck, was firing. It wasn't a 50 cal, thankfully, because the bullet would have ripped her head clean off even just
Please
going by.
Stop bringing reality into these movies.
I know, but
drives me nuts.
Don't have a fucking headshot. Hit her in the shoulder. I know about reality, but come on.
Just grazed her.
Yeah, just grazed her perfectly. But then she bleeds from it. Like if there's one point, it looks like she is bleeding all of her blood out of her head. Josh Duhamel's covered in it. Her face is covered in it. We see her two or days later. She's been flown out of there to Arizona. Not even a stitch, a bandage, a scratch. Her hairline is perfect. Nothing. She has
she's a
survived.
Super cop. She's a super cop.
She's a Jedi. She's healed it.
Yeah.
But the funniest part. It's not all that bullshit. The guy, the weirdest thing is the guy in the van, he pulls out so they can pull in so they can shoot him, which is the fucking most ridiculous setup ever. He comes back after they're not all down, and then Duhamel's shooting at him, and he gets him and literally kills him. And they're there to kill Josh Duhamel's character. The guy who's doing the sniper gets out, gets in an SUV. He is coming across that field. I'm like, he's going to ram him. I'm like, okay. He hits the fence. We have some kind of CGI fence fly at the camera. He makes the turn. In my head, I'm going, Duhamel, drop this bitch. Grab the gun. You are fucking pinned down. You have no defense right now. He gets out the vehicle, gets his buddy, and they haul off and get Wendy's or some shit. Like, he doesn't stay to finish the job. Fuck your buddy. You walk over there, you put two in them, you put your buddy in the car, and then you drive off. I thought, what fucking monkey dick shit is this? Here I am thinking, this has got some real... I'm like, the stakes are high. I'm like, oh, what the fuck? That's my thing. I was like, there's no one else watching me. I looked around my living room going, what the fuck? I was looking for somebody.
Just greeted with disappointment after disappointment, really. In this film.
Then we get him yelling at the marshal. I need to see her right now. Duhamel's like, he's calling the shots.
Yeah.
I love that Duhamel's character. He tries to yell at the marshals. And then in the biggest Barney Fife cop move ever, they let Duhamel go into a storage unit alone. And of course, Hagen calls him. Hagen's able to get his phone number and is able to call him. And they have actually a pretty good, when he's talking, when Hagen's telling him hey, this is how prison, prison isn't going to change time. It gives me nothing but time. It was kind of like this whole movie, the guy who's writing it is actually destroying his own plot based on this great little monologue that D'Onofrio is able to give us. Pretty menacing. And then he's like, basically, he's like, doesn't matter if I go to prison. I have time. Mm-hmm. I will always be able to get you. And you're kind of like, yeah, this whole thing of him sending him away was pointless in the first place.
Well, here's something. What about this? Vincent D'Onofrio and Bruce Willis switch roles. I'm not saying that was going to rescue the movie, but...
Can Bruce pull off that character? Or is he too... Because, you know, D'Onofrio slides between all kinds of characters, right?
Well, he's such saying... a great...
I know what you're saying, but do we think Bruce could have pulled it off as well as D'Onofrio? Would he have had... I mean, we've seen him as villains before, but he's more of the tough guy. This is more of the sociopathic, very methodic kind of killing machine.
I think Bruce Willis might be just too likable.
That was where I was going to go next.
To pull off being such a
piece of shit. Like, we're okay with him being a gangster and being tough, but him being like a real villain. Villain.
Yeah, maybe not. No, I was just thinking of it like...
I know what you mean. Yeah, it would have at least he had something more meatier to do.
Yes, that's kind of where I'm... Yeah. Yeah, I'm not... Wouldn't have made the film better.
It might have made it worse, though, because that's how good D'Onofrio is. Like, he carries his film.
Granted.
It's bizarre that I'm saying that an Aryan gang leader is the best part of the film, but I don't want to put him in the same category as like a Hannibal Lecter. But he's like a Hannibal Lecter in the fact that when Hannibal Lecter's on screen in those movies, you're mesmerized by him. You're mesmerized by this amazing villain and how he's being portrayed.
He's very soft-spoken, very menacing. He knows what he's doing, man. He's a pro.
So Duhamel's character eventually escapes because, as you do, he's always 12 steps ahead. He does the old cliche of, like, you know, this guy's really pulling from old action movies, but like, you're not going to have to look for me. I'm going to look for you kind of thing. You're like that whole... And then even the greatest thing is even D'Onofrio's character is laughing at him. And as the audience, we're laughing at him. We're like,
fuck you.
We don't believe a thing you're fucking saying. You're not going to do a goddamn thing.
Well, Duhamel showed them, though. He came through.
Well, when he shows up into L.A., 48 hours later, we get Rampage Jackson. And we get that little scene with 50 Cent. And here's where some of the great moments happen for this film. I don't know if it's because the guy used to be a stunt director. So maybe, you know, obviously he used to be in stunts. He used to be a stunt person. So he has some knowledge of some of this, you know, violent stuff that he does. And he also, like we said earlier, when Duhamel has to get into violence, they don't last long. He knows that he's either beaten or he's able to outsmart them by sometimes pure luck or just by some, you know, moments that happen where the villain lets their guard down because they think they're better than Duhamel. And so he sometimes gets the drop on him, not because he suddenly turns into Bruce Lee, but sometimes he gets the drop on them. But Rampage Jackson hits him in the side, drops his character, forces him to put his teeth on the curb, kind of like in American History X.
And
a moment way in there, Duhamel's character, whatever they gave him to throw, but I thought, did he actually really throw up? Like, I was wondering, like, did maybe Rampage Jackson accidentally really hit him? And, you know, like, he just is actually physically throwing up from him because he can't do it. That was good. The gangsters were good, except for we get to 50 Cent. I won't tell you what, because I'll move past it, because it's maybe my thing in the follow-up with some of my favorite stuff. But there's not a whole lot of this movie that's great. Some of the action sequences are fun. One of the best is when he goes to that garage, and I did not see him taking the guy's fingers off. Like, he threw up, like, he took the first finger off with the hand. I was like, the director, whether it was written or not, the director thought some of this stuff. There were some moments you're kind of like, man, that's kind of brutal.
Yeah, so Josh Duhamel, he tortures one of Vincent D'Onofrio's henchmen, and he uses a chisel, I guess, to hack his...
Yeah, chisel and a hammer.
...some of his fingers off, but you don't really see any of it. So
we're still CBS.
Implied, but it's implied enough that it makes you kind of recoil a bit, like...
Yeah.
And Josh Duhamel is sort of horrified by what he's actually done.
He throws up again. It's weird, because that's what's so confuddling about this movie sometimes. There's some really good acting in it. You know, visually doesn't look terrible. Like, you know, it's got good film stock. It was well lit. You know, there's certain things about it. You could tell it looks like a TV movie. There's some surprising moments of violence in it out of the blue. There are a few good written lines of dialogue that some of these characters get to say. You know what I mean?
I think the problem is we're trying to convince ourselves here.
I thought I was going to hate it more than I hated it. And the second time through, I didn't like it as much, obviously, because it was better the first time through. But it's one of those movies where it was 96 minutes. If it had been like a snowy day outside, I'd be like, okay, not terrible. Like you said, I've seen worse. Seem far worse.
It's everything I expected it to be. I'll say that.
Yeah, I'm starting to think that maybe these directed DVD movies need to be just directed by TV directors, because, you know, he didn't write it, but they're able to take someone else's script already and try to get the most out of it with visuals and performances. And I think in that respect, Mr. Barrett did a good job of taking what he was given.
He's a competent director.
He's not. I don't blame any of this on him.
No, it's very formulaic writing, and you've got the wrong lead. Ultimately, really, that's it. It's so inoffensive a movie. It's hard to be too cruel to it because it's, you know, it's too simple a movie. It's not amateurish. It's not, you know, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can't you can't mock the amateurishness of you can't mock the cast because they can't act. You know, the action's not badly handled. It's just all very mundane and mediocre.
Yeah. Retread. And not in a good way.
So you just feel a bit indifferent about the whole thing.
Yeah,
I hate to use the term meh, but it's a bit meh, isn't it?
Yeah.
I felt
about even Willis's performance somewhat.
I know.
We'll move off this in 2 seconds. The last note I had that I thought was very, very fun. Movie's called Fire with Fire. Our lead is a fireman. In the opening scene, ridiculous, whatever. There's a moment when he's driving in a car and we think he's going to, and this is where like the writing gets really shitty. Kind of like you back there. When I'm in a fire, I'm able to talk people out of it. You know, I calm them and she's like, oh, what do you say to them? He's just like, look at me, do what I say, and we're going to get out of here alive. It's like, that's what every fireman says. Like, I thought he was going to have some kind of like Rudy moment where we're all going to be like, yes, let's go join the fire department. I was like, fuck you. So, clown shoes, fireman there. We have an end scene because we can't call this Fire with Fire unless we have some reason to have fire at the end so that he's in his domain, apparently. He drives a minivan into the fiery set because after he sets the fire, he realizes that he thinks he's going to burn these guys alive, but doesn't know that his girlfriend's in there.
He's
going to go in and save him. So he's in full regalia, you know, in a scene that you should have known. This is one of those hit you over the hammer that he needs his fire equipment for reasons that we didn't know, but then it'll pay off later. So he drives in, full suit, helmet, mask, full on fire. This is a 4-alarm fire. This is the kind of fire that basically the fire department is called to put out before it spreads, but it's not saving the building. The structure is going to be done. Goes in, mask, helmet on, like a fireman should. Within 2 to 3 seconds of getting out of the vehicle and being in the fire, knowing that the girl he's in love with is possibly in danger and may very well need this mask to help her get out of the smoke, which there was no smoke, which is interesting, but anyways, out of this fire and smoke, he takes the mask off, leaves it behind. He also leaves behind the helmet. It's almost as if part of one of the 21 producers on the film was one of the hair care product companies. And they're like, God damn it, we want to see his hair in all its beautiful gel glory. He's going in there without the helmet and the mask. It was the most ridiculous thing ever. They sent a firefighter in to save a girl, minus the majority of the fire equipment he needs. And my last, before I turn it over to you for your last word, how did Vincent D'Onofrio's character survive the axe, which you knew was coming, to the heart? How did he keep going? That was embedded in his chest. That wasn't a flesh wound. That cocksucker was in. I'm just wondering how he didn't die immediately.
Well, he's a pretty burly guy, isn't he? Maybe it just didn't penetrate his ribcage much. It's like, there's a weird bit when the whole fire action sequence, there's a guy who, like, I don't know if he gets shot out of a window, but he's on fire.
I know what you're talking
and
about.
And why is the fire hose hanging out of the window? Why is there a
they could not afford to get one of those jump pads so he could fall out and land on it. So he had to slow rappel while on fire down so he could land in the thing to die.
Down a window.
And then 2 feet from the bottom, then he fell into the trash and made a big bang.
Yeah, so there's that. the whole Vincent D'Onofrio with an axe in his chest shooting at the good guy bit. You know, I've seen many a Van Damme movie. I've seen many a Seagal movie.
Oh, yes, I know.
So,
yes.
You know, there's villains capable of some fairly adrenaline-fueled kind of rage, aren't they? So, maybe he was coked up to the gills like Tony Montana in Scarface.
All we know, he was pretty much a choir boy. He may have been in head of the area, but he was pretty in the gill when it comes to racism.
Yeah. So I don't really know, to be honest. I don't know the answer to that. But maybe he was, he's just white power, man.
The power of being white kept him alive.
You know, it's a combination of white power and white powder, maybe. He was fucking coked up.
Which I don't think he was on either. I don't think he was on a white power trip or on white powder.
I don't know.
The most confuddling, the most Boy Scout Aryan leader we've ever had in the history of the Aryan Brotherhood.
Cuddly racist, Vincent D'Onofrio.
Lieutenant Seller, with all due respect, And this water's a fair bit deeper than what you're used to.
You're absolutely right. I'm just a small town cop. So if you could help me and pick out some small words and explain to me exactly how you're going to protect
this guy. Well, you know I can't provide you with any details.
Just tell me what kind of protection you have.
Well, the full weight and resources of the United States Marshal Service is being brought to bear.
Yes, I can almost feel it right now. How about this? Why don't you just give me the boy?
All right, he can sleep on my couch. I got cold beer.
In the fridge. I have ESPN on the TV. I have a 9mm Beretta. I have a Ruger Security 6357 Magnum. A Remington 86 tactical shotgun. So you tell Hagen's
men if they want to get this boy,
they're going to have to go through me. Do you understand that, you third grade motherfuckers?
Lieutenant, I realize how much this case means to you.
How's he doing?
Well, he's better than I expected. He's a tough kid.
I want you to tell him something for me, please. I want you to tell him that I said I'm sorry.
Did you hear that? Tell him I said I'm sorry.
You should tell him you're sorry, too.
Favorite scene.
We just talked about it a few minutes ago. For me, it was the torture scene in the garage where Mr. Duhamel, he removed some fingers from Aaron Gang member. And I think what tipped it for me was not only him removing the fingers, but him getting violently ill afterwards. Like, he didn't go from, you know, a lot of these films like this, or even from the action days that we know of. You know, you got your Joe Blow, who suddenly now becomes a vigilante, and they're able to stomach some of the worst, heinous stuff they have to do in the name of revenge. And at least Duhamel's character felt very grounded for the fact that, yes, he's removing a guy's digits, but it's even taking a toll on him. Like, he's like, Jesus. So I appreciated that. That was my favorite scene. That wasn't that of hilarity. I've got plenty of hilarity scenes, but of my actual scenes I actually gave a nod to, this would be my favorite. Sir, what would be yours?
Right. So this involves a character we haven't actually discussed. We've forgotten a very important character. Neil Hagen, Vincent D'Onofrio.
Yeah.
His lawyer.
Oh, he's great, yes.
An actor called Richard Schiff, who plays Harold Gethers, who is Vincent D'Onofrio's lawyer. There's a scene where Josh Duhamel and him have a face-off, basically. And it kind of, because he's a scumbag lawyer throughout the whole movie. But in this sequence, it kind of, you know, so Josh Duhamel's like chewing him out and saying like, why are you representing this piece of shit scumbag? And then he kind of turns around to Josh Duhamel and says, look, I'm threatened by him too. You know, you've got to understand that I'm a lawyer. I got into this game with the best of intentions. Some things go your way, some things don't. I don't know. It just gives a little bit of humanity to someone who I was really surprised to get any from.
Mm-hmm.
He's not an important character, but he is a very typical character that you always get in these movies, where he's the sleazy lawyer representing the bad guy.
He doesn't play him as sleazy and as like almost mustache twirling, like he really gets it.
But you do get the vibe that he's a mustache twirling villain.
Yeah.
But that scene that I'm talking about, that kind of takes you back a little bit. And humanizes him.
Yeah.
He's as scared as Josh Duhamel is, and his hands are tied too, because his family are basically at risk every time he fucks up and makes a mistake on D'Onofrio's behalf. So that's my favorite scene, because that was one of the better written scenes for me.
Agreed. Well, we move on to your favorite quote or line of dialogue.
Best one-liner.
This is going to be very disappointing. I haven't got one.
Really?
I haven't got one. Do you know what? I didn't hear a line in this film that impressed me.
I'm about to recite one that making this, I forgot until I saw it the second time. And the minute I reheard it, I was like, oh my God, yes, this is the one.
Okay, well, let me just say before you humiliate me.
I did it last episode.
No, you did. What I wrote down was my favorite scene was the exchange between the lawyer and Josh Duhamel. My favorite dialogue is that scene.
Okay, that works. I will take it as a twofer.
Not a particular line. Nothing gets said that was like fucking, you know, Oscar worthy. But I was just impressed by it, and really that, yeah, so really the dialogue in that scene and that scene itself, I thought were elevated the material a little bit. So I haven't got a line, but that scene, the dialogue in that scene.
It's
so
rare that a lawyer of that, of what they're going with, the sleazebag lawyer, that gets a chance to actually explain why they're doing what they're doing. Usually they keep him
and
as a one-note lawyer.
And you weren't expecting him to have to either. So it just stood out to me as it, actually.
I expected somehow Duham was going to take the gun and kill him or something like that. And
force
him to tell him where he's going to be, and they didn't.
Yeah. So there you go, really. So I copped out a little bit there.
Now, my favorite line comes from when Rampage Jackson brings in Mr. Duhamel, and they're in the back selling guns. And there's a plethora of guns, and the only gun Josh Duhamel wants, he wants a Glock 21 or whatever, because that's the gun he learned
on. That's right, yeah.
And this is after Rampage Jackson has told him, we got AK-47s in this bitch. And he's like, but this is the gun I learned on. And Rampage Jackson retorts as, I learned to fuck on this dumb bitch at the rec center. Her grill all fucked up, teeth all sideways, throwing gang signs, titties hanging them out. Man, I hard banged that shit, man. But then I upgraded. You know what I'm saying? I fucking loved it.
No, I'll give you that. Yeah.
It was so
good.
So good. He made the most of his moment. I was like, which is what I was saying. Where the fuck was Spicky Sam? How can he cannot do the same? Like, Rampage was amazing. I'm like, how can you not? No,
you,
no, you, no, no. What
no,
I'm saying
what
is,
what I mean is, you produced that movie. You could have had that shit.
Yeah, no, so was, good. Yeah. Oh, yeah, he delivered beautifully.
Best performance.
We might have the same, but for me, it's Mr. Vincent D'Onofrio. He is spectacular, even though his character is very weird, like how they've created him, what he is. But he does the most with everything he has. He's menacing. He's not mustache twirly. He's not over the top. I mean, he could have absolutely chewed up the scene and gone. He could have gone full on crazy if he wanted to, but he doesn't. I know I'm saying this about a guy who plays a neo-Nazi, but he was a spectacular villain. He was mesmerizing on the scene, and he did get a lot of the good dialogue, or at least he was able to make the most out of the dialogue he had to say and really make it powerful and effective. Even if it, you know, was just standard villain talk, he really sold it. That, for me, had the best performance, and for you, sir?
The same. It's almost like he has to be. You can't possibly pick a better character in that film than him. I don't think, really.
No.
That's a no-brainer, really.
Some of the guys we talked about, even we missed Kevin Dunn, who played the U.S. Marshal head. He was good. Like, there are moments. They're only in there shortly.
You know what? I'm so glad you mentioned Kevin Dunn, because I wrote that down, because
he's
love
great.
Kevin Dunn, and he's been in everything. I think he's been in everything ever made.
Isn't he?
He's one of them guys.
Great character
in
actor.
He's in fucking everything from Seinfeld to this. He's in everything. But yeah, he was great too, but... Without question, Vincent D'Onofrio is the MVP.
Favorite character.
And now, sir, your favorite character from this film.
Neil Hagen, you know.
Yeah.
Vincent D'Onofrio, again, you know, sorry to sound like a broken record here, but he is the man of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the man of the match.
I will give a special shout out, though, to Rampage Jackson's character, because for a gentleman to have such a small role and not be one of those good side actors that you've ever heard of, and he's a UFC fighter who went into acting, he made the most of his 3 to 5 minutes on screen. He was really, really fun.
I'll tell you what I'll do, just to kind of mix things up a little bit. Vincent D'Onofrio was my favorite actor in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going for the lawyer.
Okay, fair.
He was my favorite character, actually, because that scene, that really did stand out to me. So I'm gonna give him some props, as 50 Cent would say.
And I will give it then to, because obviously Vincent D'Onofrio was the best performance. I will give it to the most, maybe we'll call it the most surprising character, but it was Rampage Jackson.
Yeah.
When I saw him sitting around the car, I'm thinking, oh, this, he's going to suck. And I fucking loved him.
With the limited screen time he has, he shows up.
Kills
And like I say, the lawyer, that he was good. So definitely my favorite character was... my favorite actor was Vincent D'Onofrio.
Yeah.
My favorite character was the lawyer.
The moment of truth.
All right, now time for our moment of fucking truth. And we start off with a tough one, because we always start off with Mr. Willis. Did Mr. Willis drop a deuce, or did he drop a Bruce on this? This was very tough one for me. because the last three films, he has been electric in all of them. And if you've listened to the podcast up to this point, even though we're still in its infancy stages, we have been very, very pro Bruce Willis on his abilities in those first three movies. Regardless of whether the films themselves were good or he had the right material, he has been something. But in this film, he's so subdued and just seems to be there because he has a name, and that probably brought the money in. Or maybe, I feel this way because D'Onofrio is so mesmerizing when he's on screen that he really does overshadow Bruce's presence in this entire film. Like, there are times you forget Bruce is in the movie until he shows back up. That's how inconsequential when he's on screen it really does feel. And again, I've been dealing with this all day figuring out how I feel.
Yeah.
It's also could be because he's an action hero that doesn't do a single action thing really in this movie except for some bullshit two-punch chump thing he does it near the end of the film. But if we're going to be a true, legitimate podcast talking about what he really delivers in the film, regardless of what the content is, because others are given small moments, I will have to say, even though this pains me, and I'm sure you may disagree, and it hurts, but I do think this case, he dropped a deuce. Like you say sometimes, maybe not a giant shit, maybe just a little nugget was pinched off and fell out. But he just seems to be going through the motions and sleepwalking his way through this. He's not terrible. It's not like he's not acting. He just looks tired. Like, he looks like maybe they just had their younger kids. And I was going to look that up too, but he looks like he hasn't gotten much sleep. He's just kind of walking through this. They're just like action. He says his lines. They do two takes. He gets the fuck out of there kind of thing. That's what it felt like. Where in the other films, even if he's been given a little bit more, he really dives into them. I mean, even in setup, he's only in there for a little bit. And he doesn't have the greatest stuff to do. He finds something out of it. He really makes it worth it, you know? For me, though, I hate to say it, this is the first one, but I think in this case, for me, he drops a deuce.
He most definitely dropped a deuce.
Mr. Smith, your take on Mr. Willis's performance.
Yeah, well, there's only one way to say this, really, is that he's not given a good character. The character hasn't got much to say or do. So I agree with you. This is Bruce's first deuce. But look, you know, you can blame all these things, but he just doesn't seem really. He's sleepwalking through this one.
Yeah, he just doesn't seem invested for nothing in this one. He's like, yeah, I'll take the check.
But you know, there's nothing the only thing I can say in his defense is there's nothing to be invested in.
This is true. Yeah, it's a deuce. It's a deuce, kind of like on a technicality sometimes.
Because you just showed up for the paycheck.
Yes. Yeah. Unfortunately, yes.
Look, there's nothing. There's nothing for me here. But I can't turn down $3 million for a week's work.
Yeah.
Kind of situation. So, you know, you live by the sword, you die by the sword, I'm afraid. You showed up for a shitty movie with a shitty character, and you were pretty shitty in it, so.
Yeah. All that shit means a deuce.
There's no other way around it. It's a deuce.
He most definitely dropped a deuce.
All right, finally, is this movie a Bruce or a deuce? I think some of you know we're headed this. I'll be honest, it was a bit of a conundrum at first. Not that it was going to be a Bruce, but we've argued in the last two films about certain things. And this one, it was competent directing. This gentleman was brought in because this gentleman knows how to direct because he does it in TV without having to be a writer. He was not a writer at all. The last two movies we did, one of the directors, if not the director and writer, was also a writer. So like in setup, there were two writers, but one of them was also the director. So they're full at fault for how their films did and didn't turn out. This gentleman did what he does in TV land, got a script, squeezed every last bit of juice he could out of it. So for that, I'd give his directing a Bruce because he worked his ass off. But the film itself has a ridiculous third act. There's way too many cliches. And Josh Duhamel, and again, like we said, I don't think it's his fault, but he's out of his depth. He should, I mean, I wouldn't have turned down being in this role. So I don't blame him for taking the role, but he's not a lead actor, especially for this action movie. And because of it, it just drags down every other possible element that could have made it even worth it. Because again, like you said, we know this is a B movie. This is straight to DVD. And it was somewhat enjoyable. If you watch it once, you'll have some enjoyment out of it. But it's just a deuce, unfortunately. And not because some people didn't try, but the writing was terrible. and Duhamel was out of his depth. And just like some of these, you're like half the stuff we talk, like, what? You're just so blown away by some of the things they pull off. And then you're stunned 2 minutes later by some other stuff. You're kind of like, wait a minute, okay. So we got this cool gunshot back and forth. And then the guy's just going to drive across the road to pick up his buddy and not kill the people he's there for. You're like, what? I don't, huh? So for me, unfortunately, I do give Mr. Barrett credit. You know, I'm glad for him that he has a good career in TV, and I'm sure he does a hell of a job in the TV world of churning him out in 60 minutes. But for me, unfortunately, I'm going to have to say this one is another deuce.
This film was definitely dropped a deuce.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. This is definitely a deuce for me. Like, to go back just briefly over what we've said about the other films, you know, whereas I was sort of saying, look, in the setup, you know, a man's got to know his limitations. They knew their limitations. Catch 44, I think the guy was a bit egotistical and couldn't make it work. In this one, I agree with you completely. He's a competent director. He's been given a very formulaic movie with a very bland leading man. And I don't think there's many films where the villain can carry the movie. That's just too much of an ask. It's kind of like saying Alan Rickman carried Die Hard.
Yeah.
No,
or
he's
even
a great
Anthony
villain.
Hopkins carrying Silence of the Lambs. He didn't.
Yeah.
He was
no,
great.
No, he's great. But that's not enough.
No.
Is what I'm
you
saying.
Need, you need the mano y mano. You need the good and the bad to carry.
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, a younger Bruce Willis against Vincent D'Onofrio, you may have had something.
Yes.
But on this occasion, yeah, you're just given the wrong lead, a weak script. He's a TV director, you know. So he did his best. So I don my cap to him. But ultimately, you know, this is a deuce. This is an all-out juice for me.
This film was definitely dropped a deuce.
There's not even peanuts in it. They didn't get any peanuts. Those are burned up.
maybe a few shards of sweet corn, but no, that's it. That's it.
I hope then, now that we've got four in the books, I hope that those of you who are still listening and will keep on this journey, because we got 36 to go. But July is coming up, the 4th of July here in America, as we celebrate our independence from that limey son of a bitch. However, I wish I could say it's an exciting one. But I do believe we get another team up. Maybe not a team up, but at least they're in the same film. Mr. Willis and 50 fucking Cent will be back in July for the 2014 action thriller, The Prince. So be sure to check us out. And also check out our main podcast, The Cheeky Bastards, for more fun taking shits on other people's stuff.
Come on over, you're all welcome.
And thank you so much for those of you who have found us on the Last of the Action Heroes Podcast Network. I hope
Definitely.
That we are adding to the content here, and that we are a nice feather in the cap as opposed to a pebble in your fucking shoe.
Thanks, guys.
And that will do it for our fourth episode. Please feel free to reach out to the show on the show's socials, which can be found in the show notes, and tell us what you thought about this film, how you feel about Bruce as an actor, or even to let us know what you think about the show. We'd also greatly appreciate it if you'd give the show a like, leave us a review, and follow the show on the Last of the Action Heroes Podcast Network, where you can find other amazing podcasts dedicated to such iconic action stars as Stallone, Lundgren, Van Damme, Schwarzenegger, and Seagal. The link to the network can also be found in the show's notes. So won't you please join us again next month, as Steve and I will be reviewing Bruce's role in 2014's action thriller, The Prince, to see if he dropped a deuce or if he dropped a Bruce. Until then.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
This has been a Man with an Exceptional Beard production.